This is Bedside, a podcast series on a mission to debunk sex. I'm your host, Tatiana, and each week we'll uncover stories, ideas, routines, and expert information to help guide you on your ever-evolving journey of good sex. We believe that through democratizing sexual wellness, we can shift cultural taboos and make way for authentic and limitless access to pleasure, joy, and connection to the body. On the podcast today, I'm in conversation with Kiana Reeves, a somatic sex educator, pelvic care practitioner, certified doula, and Foria's chief education officer. Kiana started her career in birthwork as a full-spectrum doula, working with mothers and families during birth, postpartum, abortion, and miscarriage. The more she studied, the more she realized society's need for better education around female pleasure, intimacy, and sexual wellness from a holistic perspective. This realization sparked her passion for understanding the connection between wellness, sexuality, birth, intimacy, and the many cycles of change women experience during their lifespan. On the episode today, we cover the deeply rooted connections between mind and body, the role that stress and emotions can play on our bodies and sex life, and the depth that our pleasure has, especially when it comes to our arousal and our pleasure potentials. Kiana also shares her tips and insights on erogenous zones that we may not be aware of, as well as how we can use therapeutic products like CBD to enhance and facilitate those connections. I can't wait for you to listen to our conversation and gather a larger perspective on what intimacy and arousal can be like for you. Without further ado, please welcome Kiana Reeves to the podcast. Kiana, I am so excited to be chatting with you today. Thank you so much for joining us on the Bedside Podcast. Just a very warm welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I know it's going to be a great conversation. We don't even know what we're going to say yet, but it's going to be good.
It's going to be great. First and foremost, how are you doing lately? I know it's been so crazy and life has just thrown so many ups and downs our way. And so tell us how you're doing and would love to just check in on that level with you.
What a nice question. How I'm doing? Okay, so I dropped my kids off for the first time today at school in a year and a half. And I had this moment when I walked away where I was almost in tears. It's really interesting what survival does to our psyche, because we're all a little bit in this with COVID and the reality here. Parents in particular who have been doing alternative school stuff. But you can also relate it how the stress impacts our relationships and our sex lives and just our sense of well-being. So this morning to me was this breath of fresh air where I didn't even realize not having the space to drop them off at school was impacting me so much. And that moment when I just walked away and could take a walk was really, really, really amazing. Feels like a step in the right direction.
I feel like it's moments like that where they become definitive markers of your journey and your process and your progress. And it's like when you're so in it, you're doing the best you can. And then when circumstances like that happen, when definitive moments happen, when kids go back to school, you're like, oh, wow, this is a really big moment of reflection.
Yeah, you get the space to breathe again. To me, it's not a wake up necessarily, but it's this powerful moment of recognition of needs. And we get those sometimes. Today, it was in the form of the kids going to school. Sometimes it's in the form of an amazing connection with someone and a really deep conversation. And all of a sudden, you're recognizing needs then too. And it was a really beautiful thing.
That's amazing. I'm so happy that you had a beautiful experience today. So before we get into our conversation, I really like to ask guests about what their cultural background is, their upbringing, and kind of link it to a lot of the messaging that you received growing up around sex and relationships. What was that model for you, whether in school, whether at home? I'm curious to get a little of what growing up was like for you.
You ask great questions. I'm really into these questions. My dad was a pastor, and I grew up in a really interesting, I want to call it a cult, spiritual, Christian church, the kind of church where people pray in tongues and lay hands on each other and they faint. There's all sorts of prophecies going on. It was wild. It left an affectionate place in my heart for the spiritual traditions, like very alive, active spiritual traditions. Obviously, within the Christian lens, there's always an influence on no sex before marriage. There's not a lot of emphasis on pleasure. There's not a lot of conversation around it outside of abstinence or waiting. And so I remember even being a teenager, 13, 14, and getting one of those promise rings where you have a ring on and you're not having sex until marriage. That did not happen. But I think those early years deeply influenced me. I'm still unwinding a little bit my own personal relationship with how meaningful sex is, how deep it is with somebody, when to take it there in a relationship. It's such a personal choice. Some people can dive into sex and intimacy really quickly with somebody. It doesn't have to mean a lot to them. It can be really physical. It can be about physical pleasure. And what I have come to understand, and whether that's through this lens of how I was raised or just my emotional needs, I realized I can't do that. And I actually need a much longer process of getting to know someone before opening up to sexual intimacy like that. That's a little bit of that background that influenced me. And then I grew up in Santa Barbara, which is an affluent, largely white community with not a lot of conversation or openness at all in my social groups around sex. I remember being in high school and finding out that one of my friends masturbated. And we knew boys masturbated, but at this time it was like girls who masturbate. It was not a thing to talk about. And she was so shamed for it. So there remains of Christian kind of puritanical society really were present in my upbringing around this topic in particular.
I guess that makes me wonder, contrasting what your upbringing was like, what you're intentionally doing raising your kids right now.
Yes. Yeah, so I have two little boys. And I think the main thing that I want to offer them is sovereignty of their bodies and also sovereignty around the type of information they want and are ready for. My older son, who is not at all interested in talking about these kind of things, has really made it clear that he doesn't really want to go into anything around sex. He knows what the word means. And I said to him, if you ever want to talk about what that word means, let me know. I'm here. And he was like, no, no, no. I'm like, okay, you've obviously heard things at school. My younger son, who is much more curious about his body, has moments where he's like, oh, mom, what's my penis doing? And I'm like, it's an erection and that's really normal, really common, and probably feels good to touch yourself. And usually it's nice to do that when you're alone and not out in public, but it feels good and it's your body and that's great. And so even as a sex educator, someone who talks about this all the time, it's different when it's with your kids because you're feeling into their own readiness, their own experience, their own needs. And you are dealing, like I am dealing with my own upbringing and how to frame these topics in a way that give them permission and enough information, but don't overwhelm them and make them feel like it was TMI.
Absolutely. I think too, I want to understand, you grew up with your father as a pastor. What was that like when you yourself were growing up, were getting this sort of messaging? How did you forge your way around the wellness space and taking away those taboos for yourself?
You mean specifically as it relates to sex?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's been a long, long process. The interesting thing is I don't remember ever having a specific conversation with my parents about sex early on, which I think is common. Most people don't have that experience of their parents coming to them and being like, here, let's talk about this. But I also don't remember ever being directly shamed. A lot of the shame we inherit as children is pre-verbal. It's the way that our parents react to, you know, changing our diapers or when we are touching our bodies and we're two or three and we don't have explicit memories of that. So the thing that I do know is that I don't ever remember masturbating before I was 15 or 16. It wasn't even on my mind. That part of my body wasn't really in my awareness. And my first real boyfriend, I feel like I was sent a gift from somewhere else because usually teenage boys don't know a lot about sex or intimacy or vaginas or anything. And somehow I had stumbled into a relationship with this really curious young man who read Tantra and learned all about the female body and would give me these full hour-long full body massages. And I remember he was going down on me and I really wasn't comfortable. And I was coming to the place where I could almost feel like maybe an orgasm was coming and it would just stop. I'd hit a wall. And one day we kind of stopped what we were doing and he looked at me and he goes, well, I've heard that shower heads can be really helpful for this. So why don't you try yourself, like go home, use a shower head, see what you can find. And then we go from there. And I had my first orgasm with the shower head that day or the next day. And then it was because I'd had that blueprint, because I'd had that experience, I was able to access that then with him the next time. And I was just incredibly grateful for the exploratory nature of that relationship. It really had a big impact on me. We would go to the adult store together. I think he was 18. So we'd go to the adult store together and rent romance couples, erotica films, get toys. And I think that helps me a lot. He was just so accepting and loving and curious. And then in college, I went through a really different phase where I shaved my head and I really became aware that I was bisexual. And I'd always been attracted to women, but in the climate of the city that I grew up in, there wasn't a strong queer community. And so I shaved my head. I really stepped into a very different aspect of expressing myself. And I dated exclusively women and trans folks in the queer community for 4 or 5 years after that, and really heavily identified at that moment as a lesbian. I was like, I probably will never be with a man again. And that was a whole unwinding for me too, understanding my body, understanding another body with a vulva and how pleasure worked in that capacity. Getting so deeply familiar with pleasure in those realms was one of the most important experiences probably for me sexually. And then, I mean, it kept going because then I moved away. I moved to Hawaii and I did fall in love with a man. And then I got pregnant and I went through this whole transition into motherhood, which is an incredibly profoundly impactful on your sexuality, your libido, the way that you relate to your body. Giving birth changes how things feel. The type of touch you need, the type of connection you need can be really different. Each of these different phases, I think, really helped shape and parse out parts of myself that just have been, I'm a curious person and always have been about these subjects. So they really impacted me.
Thank you for sharing that, because I know this is going to be so expansive for so many people to hear the iteration of what identity and pleasure and sexuality can be over time. I think it's so easy to feel the need to identify ourselves and forge the way and go on the path so that we can get clarity and then have an answer and then that's that. And you just flipped that narrative that is so present for so many people, which is that maybe it's less about identifying and maybe more just going with the flow of what is.
I think if there's anything that I've learned, especially as it comes to sexual identity, is that, or any identity really, is that the minute you cling to something, it becomes either elusive or it becomes dogmatic in a way. The less attachment there is to identity, the more space there is for just authenticity.
I think a lot of us can probably relate to that concept in so many different categories, whether it's sexuality or not. I think with the pandemic and with COVID, we were faced with so many structures, whether it was in ourselves or externally, that were trying to seek a concrete identity and a concrete way of being that crumbled. And now we're here facing ourselves and our world in such a different way and being like, okay, maybe that's not the way. Maybe it's not as definitive as we want it to be. I mean, human beings are so funny. Like, we want answers all the time, right?
Oh yeah. We're meaning makers. Everything that we think, we try to make meaning out of. And to sit with the unknown, this pandemic is a great example of this. The way that people have responded to it, there's camps of people who are certain that this is the correct path for us. And there's so much clinging going on that it's polarizing us more maybe than we ever have been, because it allows people to feel a sense of control over their destiny and over what's happening. And everyone feels truly right. And not to say I have a favorite, but my favorite are people who are like really just in the unknown of it, really questioning, really okay with the discomfort of not knowing how things are continuing to unfold. That's a hard thing to do.
Oh my God. It's like the hardest, just getting comfortable with that entire space of discomfort.
Or like not being comfortable in discomfort and just being there anyways, just being like, ah, this is so fucking uncomfortable. Not grasping for the comfort, because that's what keeps us safe and in our own stories in a way.
I want to know how you got into somatic sex education, got into your doula work, which has now transitioned you into your work for Foria. How did that get started?
I've always been interested in sex. I was the girl in high school talking about it, curious about it. It was always on my mind. In college, I had a speculum and would help my roommates find their cervix. And we'd take pictures with the old digital camera and be like, look, my cervix. So it was a part of my heart and field. In college, I had heard the word doula, and I was just focused on this idea that I really wanted to be a doula and a midwife. And so when I moved to Hawaii, I had found this really amazing school called the School of Sacred Birth, run by a really beautiful woman named Barbara Essman, a really old school doula. And it was beautiful. It was such a powerful experience. And during that time, or close after my graduation, I got pregnant. And actually learned what it meant to be in the process of giving birth and what our needs were postpartum. And postpartum, I was shocked. We do a lot of prep for people leading up to pregnancy and birth, or relatively speaking, compared to postpartum. And as a doula, I was taught about postpartum and I couldn't get it. It was intangible. And then coming into motherhood, it hit me across the face, how little support there is, how little cultural and structural understanding communities have. We do not have intact communities for families. And because of that absence, my sister at the time was in college and I used her JSTOR login and I just printed out article after article after article on postpartum nutrition and placenta encapsulation and what our communities that are more intact than here in the United States doing for mothers and children. And so very fascinated with the subject, kept going. And in that time, founded a company with my sister called The Tulip. And we were specifically focused on pelvic care, holistic models of pelvic care and wellness for women or people with vulvas who give birth, and looking at tools like vaginal steaming and jade eggs and what are the tools that have been used all over the world to take care of this part of our body? To me, it was such a place of passion because my relationship with my body and sexuality had changed so much from motherhood. What I needed was so critically different. How to talk to my partner at the time was so critically important. And that continued to morph. And during that time, I met my amazing teacher, Kimberly Johnson. She's a somatic sex educator, sexological body worker, somatic experiencing practitioner. And she was introduced to me as the vagina proctor. And I was like, what does that mean? I want to do that, essentially. And so I followed her around and I was like, I want to know what you know. And her teacher, Ellen Heed, had just essentially set up a school for this, where Ellen, this really masterful body worker, had been doing these studies on scar tissue and how emotion and tension and energy is held in the pelvis, particularly intravaginally and intraanally, and how to work with body work and nervous system tracking with your hands to help people move those things through the scar tissue, through tension, through inflammation. So I trained with them and then I studied sexological body work after that with their teachers, Deej Juven and the Institute for Somatic Sexology. And it was right around that same time that I met our founder at Foria. And it was at this just critical juncture in my life where I was going through separation. And the timing just lined up. We were really early on. We had 3 employees at the time. And I jumped on and was able to storytell for us in a way that Matthew couldn't, because he doesn't have the body of a person with a vulva. So he doesn't have the lived experience of that sexually. And we've been able to just build our storytelling in such a beautiful way through a really co-created effort of our team.
Oh my gosh, there's so many touch points I want to go in here with you from what you just said. I think first and foremost, thank you for bringing up the postpartum experience. Because I think even more so with the presence of social media, there's kind of this idea of you just have a kid and you're on with it and your life is glamorous. And there's just such this idealized picture, and the conversation is coming out more and more, which is so amazing, because I know so many women or individuals with vulvas, birthing individuals, go through a huge transformation postpartum. I'm also wanting to hear a little bit more about what this work with pain and scar tissue and emotional movement and transformation goes on with the pelvic floor. Do you have more insight here? You could even connect this to postpartum as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because there's so much trauma from birth. There's so much trauma that happens for a lot of people when they give birth. And sometimes it's not even physical trauma. Sometimes it's deep emotional trauma from the experience. It gets stored in the body. So if you think about the body as the repository of our experiences, the body actually physically is our subconscious. The way that we store memory is in our tissues. And so if you've ever heard of somatic experiencing, it's essentially a way of looking and working with the nervous system and working with unintegrated emotional experiences that are stored in the subconscious, AKA the body, and helping them arise and complete. It's essentially what trauma is. It's not an event. It's the way that our body metabolizes or holds on to an experience that changes the way and triggers our nervous system into a type of chronic state. So a lot of people are familiar with this idea of fight or flight, which is upregulation of the nervous system. There's also freeze. And there's a really broad spectrum of what people could experience those states as being. Freeze doesn't always look like I'm frozen, I can't move. That's at the very, very extreme level of it. But there's these more subtle states like confusion and indecision, and in more heightened states, upregulation, there's fight, but there's also irritation, like chronic irritation. There's flight, there's chronic anxiety, things like that. And so this work, the somatic experiencing work, really allows you to understand and start tracking physical signs of what the nervous system is doing and relate it back to sensation in the body. It's really a tool for embodiment. And when you take somatic experiencing tool and combine it with sexological body work, this hands-on approach to working in the area of the genitals and in the pelvis, you're entering the space where there's so much emotional information. You're working with the personal relationship to the body, the familial, cultural, societal stuff that we took in around shame, which all of us have. You're working with the physical experiences we've actually had physically. For some people, I didn't know this, and I think it's so fascinating. You can get scar tissue around your G-spot from lack of lubrication during sex, which is basically every teenager ever. And the scar tissue, what it does is it restricts blood flow. And blood flow is key to arousal. But that restriction also can be really desensitizing. So you can have areas of numbness intravaginally from scar tissue and not able to reach your full pleasure potential. So the idea for this work is that you're using a hands-on approach to help track and co-regulate somebody's nervous system. So working with them on understanding what's coming up for them through these different avenues of sensation. So you're tracking sensation, actual physical sensations. You're tracking imagery that might come up. You're tracking behaviors. You're tracking all of these things where you're in the territory of the genitals. And it just brings so much subconscious material to the surface. Emotions, experiences that somebody had been storing in their body, but maybe not able to hold until that moment when it was being held with them. And so it's profound work. It's incredibly deep.
I'm very moved by that. And thank you for explaining that. I'm wondering, when you do this type of work, you said something when you first started sharing on this, that it's something that you want to create movement for, or not hold so tightly locked in, is that feeling I get when I think of what the storage in the body feels like. I guess I'm wondering, from you, when you do this sort of work, when one does this sort of work, is the intent to just create motion? Is the intent to release the physical sensation? What is the process of that look like?
It's different for every person. Some people are coming because they are in chronic pain. Some people are coming because they are experiencing dissociation. Some people are just completely unfamiliar with this part of their body. Some people want to experience more pleasure sexually. So it depends on the intent of the client that I've worked with, but really it's to bring sensation and awareness to that part of the body and be with whatever is. And the intent alone is so powerful that often we'll be tracking sensation and something else emerges. And the something else is usually a completion or a feeling or a wave of, I don't want to call it energy, but often it's a wave of tears or it's a wave of redness that creeps up the face. And those sorts of emotional releases really allow the body to release. Like often when someone allows a big, huge cry to come through that they didn't even know was there, I will feel, if my hand is in their vagina, I will feel what's happening in the muscle. And that muscle is dancing and moving and pulsing and getting hot. And I have felt adhesions, like these rubber band type stringy things on a vaginal wall, totally melt while someone's experiencing a really big emotional moment. And the thing starts pulsing. It starts going like beep, 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 beep. And then it gets hot. It throbs for a little bit and then it softens. And our body is so wise. It wants to protect us from pain. And it has a lot of intelligent ways of doing that. The work is simply giving the body an opportunity to feel safe, to experience the thing it was holding on to, so that it no longer has to hold so rigidly.
I just felt so much relief there. I got emotional as you were just saying that, because just the interconnectedness of it all. And I think somewhere along the lines, a lot of us create such a distinction between mind and body and pain and mind and suffering. And we love to put it in different categories, but just to hear the interconnectedness and the experience that you physically had in a room with someone witnessing the movement of an emotion with the release of pain or scar or whatever that might be. It's just beautiful to hear.
Yeah, it's deeply transformative work. And there's not enough people who are trained in it just yet.
I'm also like, you're simply the coolest person to just be in a room with someone at such level of vulnerability. I can feel you are such an entity. You are such a presence. And I know that you've probably shifted so many people's lives.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you. I hope so.
With Foria and the work that you're doing now, I really would love to hear a little bit more about it. By the way, I've used Foria product for a while. I love it. I mean, it is just next level, but I kind of want to leave the ball in your court to explain what it is and what's up.
Yeah. So I joined the team when we had just launched our very first CBD product, which was Awaken. And we didn't at the time know what we were sending out into the world. We knew it was a great arousal oil. We knew it worked for sexual pleasure for people with vulvas. We did not know the full spectrum of impact it would have. I think my favorite thing about our entire line of intimacy products is A, that they're designed for sexual pleasure and most of the products work for anybody, but they were designed around the arousal trajectory of someone with a vulva. So they're really specifically to support our pleasure, which is not something that's been done in our current world. So I love that intentionality. The second thing I love is that there are so many things that can get in the way of pleasure. Even if someone doesn't have pain, it's likely that all of us can continue to deepen our own experience of sexual pleasure. And so the fact that our products are designed literally to support that, that's their sole purpose. And they're doing so across the lifespan. So they're hitting home for people who are in their 20s and 30s and really wanting better sex, bigger orgasms, more intense orgasms, more sensation, more arousal, more pleasure. They're hitting for people who are in postpartum and who've experienced a diminished libido and vaginal dryness and some hormonal changes and who have pain from either surgical stitches or an episiotomy or just healing after birth. And they're hitting for people who are going through menopause or perimenopause and they're having hormonal changes. So we're really looking at this full lifespan. They're working for people who are on SSRIs, for people who are going through chemotherapy and having their own experience around how they relate to their sex drive and their libido. And I think that is so profound. It's not just this one, hey, this works for you. This is working across multiple territories that are common, really common, universal in a lot of ways. So there's the Awaken Arousal Oil, which is really designed to support pleasure. And with that, we got so much feedback that it was such an incredible product. People were using it kind of like a lube though. And it's not meant to be a lube. It's meant to be used a small amount. It soaks into the tissues and it gets you going. It helps you get really turned on. So we made a lube that would make sure everything stays slippery, relaxed, wet, lubricated. You want so much lube, especially with penetrative sex, so much lube because it makes things feel better. It also protects you from micro tears. It also makes it feel better for the partner that you're with. And most lubes are filled with just crap. So this is pH balance, two ingredients, really slippery, really beautiful. And then my favorite product, I love all of them and I use all of them personally, but really my favorite product, the Intimacy Suppositories, because they're designed to do basically what Awaken is doing externally on the vulva and the clitoris and take the arousal factor intravaginally. And the vagina is capable of so much pleasure. And we often have hypertonic pelvic floor, or we have not reached our full arousal potential when penetration happens. And so the G-spot stimulation or the cervical stimulation or the AFE zone, which are all very orgasmic areas, are not getting the blood flow that they would need to really truly feel orgasmic. And so the suppositories are all about relaxation and arousal and comfort for people who experience discomfort, which is also very common. And I just think it's so rad. Someone's using these vaginally or rectally and they're writing to us and saying, I just had my first anal orgasm. How is that even possible? Or I use these, I didn't know what to expect and my sex life is changed forever. So our purpose and our mission around that is the most exciting thing that we get to do. I feel like my own personal work is able to be fused into a much broader audience because I get to help support our messaging, our storytelling, our education, what products we're developing, where is the need, who are we serving?
That is really amazing. And I think one of the first things I just thought of was you're really expanding for people and sharing with people the depth of what pleasure and the possibility around it can be. Going back to how we started our conversation and what the messaging around sex was and can look like and how certain experiences can define you and making you think that pleasure maybe only looks one type of way, but it's really so much more nuanced than that. And I also loved hearing just how the person who is using these products is of all ages, of all experiences. Everybody can benefit from deepening their pleasure. I kind of want to chat about some creative ways that we can explore our pleasure and our erogenous zones. And I'm wondering if you have any tips or advice here for people who are looking to do it, maybe haven't adventured out into the depths of what it can be. I'm curious to hear more.
So most people start masturbating at a really early age and either will continue masturbating a similar way the rest of their life, or maybe they were interrupted and shamed by their family or someone caught them and then they stopped masturbating usually until high school, early 20s. And then they're still in the same kind of like, need this to be private and quick and quiet. And the thing that makes any type of pleasure and sex really great is novelty and exploration and curiosity. And the way that our brains work is they're really run by habit. We find comfort in regularity and habit. And masturbation for most people becomes a habitual way of relieving stress or experiencing a type of personal intimacy or fantasizing about partner type intimacy. But it's not done intentionally to explore what your capacity is. And so my tips would be masturbate more without goal. Don't try to go towards orgasm in the way that you do. If you masturbate with a vibrator, try your hands. If you masturbate with your hands, try a vibrator. If you don't use lube, always use a lube. And then inside of that, really exploring wands, really exploring breath, breath, sound, and movement are the three ways to move the body in a different way. So notice what's happening when you touch yourself. Notice what your breath is doing. If you hold it, if you tighten, if you clench, expand it, like go really long on the exhale, go really long on the inhale, hold your breath at the top, get so weird with yourself that you don't even know what you're going to do next and try it from that explorer connection to yourself. And then the second thing I'll say is the sound. Sound opens our bodies. Our throat is so, so connected to our pelvis. And so when we open our mouth, when we open our jaw, like all of these muscles in the jaw that we clench when we're stressed are also very connected to the pelvis and being tight in our pelvic floor. So when we open our mouth and the hinge of our jaw, and you open your throat and you make a sound like, like a deep guttural moan, you're actually softening and opening other parts of your body. And you're actually giving yourself permission to express and just sound however feels natural for you. And I think that's really important because so many people are afraid of being heard that they're not expressing themselves sexually when they're alone or even with a partner. And so experimenting with sound is also really important. And then movement and positioning could be a really good opportunity too. So if you usually masturbate on your back lying down, try turning over and getting on your hands and knees or squatting or sitting up or standing up. And this can be for a person with a vulva or a person with a penis. The more you change how you explore your body, the more your body's going to show you something new that you didn't know before. And then there's ways to experiment with touch itself. So fast and quick, slow and hard, firm grasping, scratching, tugging, pulling. There's all of these different ways that we can touch ourselves that we don't even go to because we're focused on the clitoris or just rubbing ourselves in the same way we always have. So try a slap, try a tickle, try something that might even make you laugh or feel really like a fool.
I love that. How do we introduce that, or how have you introduced that with partners and bringing that experimentation into the bedroom?
It is hard. Train to have the vocabulary and the framework on how to bring these things up and not offend somebody and make them feel like they're doing something wrong. I think that that's always the dance in bringing this into partnership, is wanting it to be an invitation, not directive that do it this way because you're doing it wrong. And not that it's our responsibility to caretake our partner's emotions, but certainly it feels better for people if it's going into the curiosity together. So I navigate this in my personal life all the time, because the work that I'm personally studying right now is a lot about polarity and about if someone's holding a pole of surrender, who's holding the pole of directionality. And if I want to be in more of a state of surrender or like submissive, I don't identify submissive as much, but the surrender piece of it, like I don't want to be in charge, but I still really know what my body likes and I don't want to be the teacher in the bedroom. How do I communicate that in a way that empowers a partner to lead? And it can be a really difficult dance. And sometimes it's the simplest ways that we can do that. Sometimes it's really through being expressive in the moment. So responding when someone does something you really like, being a lot more loud about how much you like it. Like, that feels so fucking good. Or a big moan or a big sigh, or like, yes, 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 that's like, yes. And for when it doesn't feel good, you know, how can it be an invitation? How can you say, you could of course say no, not like that, or that doesn't feel good. But even sometimes if it's like, or like, ouch, or, you know, just a truthful response about how things are feeling. And in that way, we don't get into what a lot of, I'll say, women tend to do, is be an override of sensation. So it might be feeling a little good and a little painful, and we'll just endure. Enduring will kill all of the goodness in a sexual moment. So just being truthful, ouch, or making sounds. And then definitely there's moments to be exploring things like fantasy and inviting your partner to an intentional conversation and being like, I would love to explore some things deeper sexually with you. Would you be open to having a conversation about fantasy and desire and sharing with me that vulnerable place? And I would love to share with you mine, and we can talk about things we want to incorporate. But it will always feel clunky in the beginning, almost always.
You were speaking on your social media recently about just the anatomy of the clitoris, and you've touched on it already, just the different parts of pleasure within the vagina itself. I kind of want to hear a little bit more about what different zones we can unlock that are outside of what we know already for pleasure.
Yeah, the whole vagina is a big orgasm in my mind. This is not even zone territory. This is literally the whole vagina is an orgasmic place. And it's just about us finding sensation that feels good for us. Every person with a vulva and a vagina is wired differently. So we all have a different network of how our nerves are worked. Every G-spot looks different. every G-spot feels different. Some of them are more towards the opening of the vaginal canal. Some of them are more towards the back of it. And the important thing is really about understanding and going into what feels good for you. And so a few tools for me that I think are important outside of masturbation, like internal massage can just be such an amazing way for you to get familiar with, oh, pressure here feels next level. Really, I found a place in my, I'm going to try to describe this because you can't see what I'm doing. If I put my thumb into my vagina and pressed down into the side towards my glutes, that for me is a place that feels so good when there's pressure. Amazing. And I would have never known that if I didn't explore that part of my body. And there's so many areas in the vagina that are the same. So crystal wands are really good for that because they can reach, or any kind of wand, curved wands, metal wands, anything that can be longer than your fingers is a really good way to explore these territories and give a little bit of pressure. And then I'm a huge fan of jade eggs, not for the reason that they're necessarily have become famous recently, which is more like the Kegel tone, your pelvic floor reason, but because they're an incredible tool for proprioception. And they're so subtle. The contact they make is so subtle and it wakes up sensation in a way that almost nothing else does. With penetration, with penetrative sex, even just penetration with hands, fingers, toys, we are used to a lot of stimulation. We're used to, if it's not friction, it's at least a lot of vigorous motion. And with a jade egg or a Benoit ball or a Kegel trainer even, but I like the jade egg, what you're training your body to do is notice and feel sensation with the slightest amount of contact. And it allows us to build neural feedback wiring for pleasure to really subtle sensation, which opens us up to so much more pleasure when we then are stimulated by our lover's hands or any body part. So I love those. I think they're phenomenal. I think that's where I would start. Self-massage, jade eggs, internal tools to wake those spots up, and you can really explore. Cervical orgasms are wild and amazing and really deep.
I have never even heard of a cervical orgasm.
And there's different traditions that explore these things. We have our clitoris, which activates essentially all of our erectile tissue network and is really, really sensitive. And it's the most accessible orgasm that most people can reach. And it's a beautiful, powerful, and you can have multiple orgasms. And there's no hierarchy on orgasms, but they all feel different and they can support the pathway to a different type of orgasm. So for me, you know, a clitoral orgasm then can become the doorway for a combination orgasm where there's G-spot stimulation with clitoral stimulation. And a lot of people can enter into understanding what a G-spot orgasm feels like through extra clitoral stimulation while they're being stimulated internally, which is why using a vibrator or touching yourself while your partner's inside of you, you can have a more likely chance of having an internal orgasm. And then behind that, there's often wiring around this zone called the AFE zone, anterior fornix something. I don't remember the exact name, but it's between what's typically known as the G-spot and the cervix just behind it. It's a deep intravaginal zone that is really sensitive. And then behind that, you have the cervix. And what's cool is we experience these different states of arousal. And how aroused we are is our ability and our capacity to experience sexual pleasure. So in very, very heightened states of arousal, we have a lot of blood flow in the genitals. The genitals are engorged in the same way a person with a penis needs a lot of blood flow to be hard. We people with vulvas need a lot of blood flow to be really turned on and really receptive to pleasure. And we need the same amount as a person with a penis. We have the same erectile tissue beds. And so working with that level of arousal when we're doing internal work is hugely important. And then exploring stimulation in these zones. And the cool thing I'll tell you is that the cervix and the uterus does this rad thing called tenting when you're really turned on. And it actually, there's ligaments that pull the uterus kind of up and back, pull the cervix back a little bit, make more space in the vagina, and it can expose these nerve endings that are at the end of the vaginal canal that really respond to stimulation. But it doesn't feel good unless you're really, really, really turned on. there's so much I could say, but to me, a cervical orgasm feels like it comes from your belly button and radiates out through your entire body. It's a totally different sensation. It's wild.
What I'm learning today from you is that arousal is linked to the unlocking of pleasure potentials. So when we allow ourselves to surrender, to explore, to play, to moan, to make sound, to wiggle around, whatever it is, we're allowing ourselves the potential to heighten our arousal, thus unlock these parts of ourselves that are kind of quiet, that might need more subtle touches, that don't need the crazy vibrator head. I really appreciate the undertone of the subtlety here. It reminds me of when I'm doing yoga and I'll do yin practice, which is much more slow. You don't have to twist so hard or work so hard with the muscles. It's the subtle movement of the muscles that allows the release and the sensation. And this is really cool.
Just to add to that, the best sex happens when we are fully in our bodies and in the moment. And what inhibits us from being there is when we're in our thoughts, when we're in our head, when we are hyper aware of how our body looks or feels, what we are or aren't doing. And so the breath, sound, movement are all ways of getting into the moment, into the body, and responding truthfully to what's happening. And it's just such a direct pathway to being able to experience what's actually happening and not be in our heads.
I want to know how you connect to your sensuality. How does that play a part in the bedroom, outside of the bedroom? I think the concept of sensuality is something that a lot of people don't feel connected to. They're like, what's that? I don't experience this. I want to hear from you what that experience has been like for you to unlock that and what your practice is around it.
Sensuality essentially is us fully in our senses. And we are not that. As a society, we are very in our heads, very, very analytical, very hyper linear focused, strategically focused. And so it makes so much sense that many people are walking around going like, what is sensuality? How do I feel it? And it requires us to pause and again, get out of the head and into the moment through the senses. So sensuality is being able to taste, touch, feel, smell, respond directly to the sensorial input in the moment in a pleasurable way, or maybe not in a pleasurable way, but sensuality in its fullness is aiming for pleasure. We look for things that make us feel good emotionally, but also physically. And so my practice as someone who has two kids and who has at times felt deeply disconnected from my sensuality, stress and anxiety are the biggest things that will ever kill that connection with ourselves, is having not just a solo sexual practice, really is a solo sensual practice that is built around pleasurable sensation. And for me, the best one that I found outside of a solo sexual pleasure, aka masturbation, is a movement practice. So I will a few times a week, it used to be every night, I'm trying to do that again, but carving out an hour after bedtime, putting on my favorite music, turning out the lights and rolling around on the floor in my underwear, like grinding and moaning and like crying, laughing, like just really allowing what is in the body to be expressed through the breath, sound, movement. Those are the tools. And it's such a gift. That practice has transformed my life for sure.
What has that done for you?
The best thing it has done for me, it's given me in the moment real-time access to my emotions. And I think we're feeling our emotions all the time, and we are not. There's so much information coming at us all the time, and we have to push so much aside. And we don't really often give ourselves or carve out the time to just feel our feelings truthfully and fully. And for me, what it's done is it's a time and space to feel my emotions fully while still feeling pleasure in my body. And so some nights my practice will look like a lot of pleasure and it feels very sensual, very sexual. And I can feel my juices flowing, my cup runneth over, I feel radiant and yummy. And in the same moment, I could have also just bawled my eyes out. I have cried in these practices harder than I've maybe ever cried in my life, to the point of gagging. I'll tell you this is a TMI, but probably 4 weeks ago, I had something going on with one of my kids' dads that was really triggering for me. I was so upset about it. I didn't know how upset I was. And so during the practice, I like buried my face in a pillow. And while I was moving, I was also screaming pretty hard into the bed as much as I could. And then I have a bat also that I use, and I will beat the shit out of my bed with the bat and really help move anger, because anger is not an accepted or an appropriate emotion, especially for women. So I'm hitting the bed and batting it, and then I lean into it and I'm screaming into a pillow, and then the fierce, ferocious tears come, and the agony and the heartbreak and all of the stuff that is scary to feel because it's so deep. It's such a deep well. And if you don't move it, that's the stuff that becomes trapped. It's the stuff that numbs you. It's the stuff that desensitizes you. It's the stuff you have to cut yourself off from. So I'm crying so hard that I start gagging, and I couldn't stop it. And so I run outside and I'm crying and gagging. And we've been living with my family during COVID, and my mom comes outside and she's like, "Are you okay? Like, what is going on?" And I was like, "Bring me some water." And it just was like, I felt really good also while I was crying and gagging. And that is, to me, the pinnacle of what these kinds of practices can do, is you can be fully owning the truth of what you're feeling in the moment and still be okay and still be moving it and being with it.
That is such a funny story. Thank you for sharing that. Oh my goodness. I think just what I'm getting from this is just this radical honesty and acceptance of what is going on for you, and allowing the body to also process that along with the mind. I think what's coming to mind for me right now too is, what are the ways that you feel, if we don't do this sort of stuff, if we don't access, if we don't allow the movement and the processing, like, where does that leave us?
Well, it leaves us living a life not fully lived and not fully expressed. To me, this process of being radically in the truth of my experience reminds me of learning how to be a kid again. I watch my kids and they are playful and fun and curious, and then something happens and they are crying and snotting and so upset and kicking on the floor, and they let it through and they recover and they're joy again. And that's our nature. Our nature is joy and love. And what happens to us over time and through the way that we are indoctrinated into believing that emotions are not welcome, that they're not to be trusted, this type of practice helps us remember and relearn that not only are they okay, they're what provides us our health, our mental health. They are truly what provides our body health, because when we don't have to carry them, when we don't have to carry this experience and this experience and this incomplete experience and this one and this one and this one, we don't have to be weighed down by the pain or the intensity of all of them clinging to us all at once. There can be emotional completion, and then they become memories, but they don't become charged. They're not these charged ways that then suddenly impact the way we experience the world. And I really believe that when you store so much in the body and don't let it move, it will make you sick. It will make you sick either physically or just not feel very alive, numbed out at least.
That is really powerful. That is extremely powerful. And I think a lot of the conditioning, as you mentioned, supports the idea of just be happy, just move on, just bury it or compartmentalize it or shove it under the rug. Oh my gosh, is that a generational concept? Put it under the rug. Here's our family rug. It's piled high, you know? And it's just, my gosh, it's wild.
And you inherit that. The science and biology says you inherit the trauma of your parents and your grandparents. And that is massive. That is massive. To be born into a family's trauma and then to have the tools to help clear those things, it changes everything.
I'm thrilled at this conversation. I could go hours with you on this, but I want to kind of wrap up here a bit. And I guess, what is your advice for people about having a successful and healthy sex life? What do you think is that key thing that we should be doing on our journey of pleasure and embracing that?
So the first is make time for pleasure for yourself. Whether that's masturbation or a sensual self-practice, make pleasure a part of your habitual nourishment and self-care, number one. The second thing is define what healthy sex life looks like for you and what you really want. Because if you don't know what you want, for example, many people have sex because they want intimacy and they're actually engaging in sex that is more pleasure focused than intimacy focused. And so they're trying to fill a need for intimacy with physical pleasure, which then can put you in a space of, you know, emotional vulnerability where you're actually not getting your needs met. So get clear, get really hyper clear. Like, what do I want my sex life to feel like? What is most nourishing? What kind of touch? What kind of partnership or not partnership? It's not just the how do I want to be touched. It's the question, how do I want to be loved, to be honest? And you can give yourself that kind of love. And then you can also bring that piece into this is what I need to, you know, deeply to connect with someone sexually. Is it monogamy? Is it really open, transparent conversations around these types of things? And then you start getting to build your own framework around what healthy, nourishing sex life is for you. And you're not just at the whim of, oh, I met someone and maybe now feels like a good time to have sex. And suddenly you're having sex and you don't even know where you stand. And it's triggering all of your habitual emotions around abandonment and intimacy and needs. And it just helps clarify what your needs are. So those, I think, are the three.
I love that. And it made me just think it's really about taking your power back in that situation too, where you're not at the whim of somebody else to give you that or to receive that. That is in your power. I love this. This has been a killer conversation.
I'm so excited. Yeah, it has been.
Tell us where we can connect with you, where we can hear more of you. Share that.
So obviously, Euphoria is a great place. I'm the very like behind the scenes of planning out our content, what we're going to talk about, what blogs we're going to write, who we're going to interview, what we're saying on social media. So you'll get an infusion of lots of these types of concepts on our social media and on our blog. And then I have a personal Instagram too that eventually will become more educational, but I've just really not stayed in that space there just yet. And I think one day soon I'll probably open up my private practice again and start taking private clients. I'm not able to do that just yet, but it will be in the very near future.
Well, I hope you do. I mean, I'm already intrigued. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. This has just been a really lovely conversation to have. And not only did it bring me a lot of knowledge and relief, but I know listeners will definitely feel the same. So thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been so fun. A real, really good conversation.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. I hope that you loved this conversation as much as I did. Kiana and the Euphoria team have an exciting offer for our listeners here. They created a discount code for anyone who is interested in exploring their product. I myself was introduced to Euphoria a few years back and have been a huge fan of their CBD sex oil. It's the product that I first started with and is probably my favorite. If you are somebody who's ever experienced any sort of discomfort or pain during sex, this product is definitely for you. And even if you just kind of want to have more of an outer body experience, tap into that arousal that Kiana was sharing with us, I really, really urge you to take a look at what their offers are. So if you're interested, head over to euphoriawellness.com and use the code BEDSIDE at checkout. That's euphoriawellness.com and use the code BEDSIDE, BEDSIDE at checkout. And of course, if you liked this episode, if you learned something, if you felt connected and want to share, please send it to a friend or leave a review if you have a moment. I would so appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening, and I will catch you guys next week. Thank you for listening to the Bedside Podcast. If you liked this episode and want to follow along with similar stories and interviews, be sure to check out our Instagram at The Bedside and TheBedside.co online. Make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and of course, share with your friends. It's the best way you can support us and our good sex mission. Thank you for listening.